Welcome to the Subtle Cane Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, broadcasting from the Aorta of America, beautiful festival city, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where we pump out reason and pierce through the propaganda. Here we go. Today is April 7th, 2024. And we've got breaking news from our lead correspondent, Brock Tanslax. It's been a while since Brock reported in, but he's here to shed light on a newly leaked recording of what I'm told appears to be Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab discussing plans that may have serious impacts on all of our lives in the very near future. Brock, I turn it over to you. What do you got for us?
Yes, Aaron, this as of yet unverified recording of two very powerful people, as you say, Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, was given to me by a confidential source familiar with the thinking of the diabolical duo heard here.
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
The Pinky and the Brain. Yes, Pinky and the Brain. One is a genius, the other's insane. They're laboratory mice, their genes have been sliced. They're Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, that's the intro to Pinky and the Brain, Brock. It's clearly not Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab.
Well, who's to say? I did mention that it is, as of yet, unverified.
Fair enough. It's probably as useful as any other news I hear, so thank you for that, Brock. Keep up the good work.
Back to you, Aaron.
This is episode 67 of the Subtle Cane Podcast, For Prying Out Loud, Part 1. If you're new to the Subtle Cane Podcast, thank you for gracing us with your virtual presence. If you're a returning listener, thank you for your continued support. It is much appreciated. I know I'm a dork, but sometimes I just can't help myself. There's so many difficult topics that we discuss and deal with on a regular basis, and the doom and gloom can overwhelm us at times, myself included. Sometimes we just have to stop and remind ourselves not to take ourselves too seriously. The topic that we're about to address today is a serious one, and like I said, I hope that you come here having listened to the last episode because I believe it provides some context to the forthcoming content. We're going to be wading into that world of scientific research that is always subject to bias, despite the various mitigation techniques employed. Some are more effective than others. We're going to be covering information from a peer-reviewed medical journal that addresses concerns with the mRNA gene therapies now classified as vaccines, and yes, specifically the COVID mRNA jabs. Now, I know there are myriad people out there who are on either side of the aisle when it comes to these jabs. I know that a lot of people are covering it in different aspects of it, and I know that it's a charged and a polarizing topic. I get that. I personally chose not to accept the jab into my life, but I have many coworkers, friends, and loved ones who did. I'm sure you do as well. This is not about I'm right and you're wrong. It's not about I told you so. What I hope to accomplish here has more to do with providing insight into aspects of this issue that may have massive implications that aren't always addressed. Hypothetical massive implications. So I'm going to preface this with a few points. Point number one. I'm not claiming to be an authority on the content in the paper that I am discussing. I'm not. I am familiar enough with the information that I think I can explain the concepts in a way that will make sense to people listening, despite whether or not they have a medical background. Point number two, the authors of the paper we will be discussing are merely proposing a potential concern and are presenting evidence to support their position that I believe warrants serious consideration. And number three, I'm not asking you to agree with me or the authors of the paper for that matter. I'm presenting what I see through my admittedly and inevitably biased perspective, and then providing you with links to the information so that you can do your own due diligence. I ask you to simply acknowledge that all of us have bias, no matter what your stance is on this topic. But to dismiss the issue out of hand without any consideration, that's adherence to an orthodoxy, and it's not the genuine curiosity that true scientific inquiry requires. Now, apropos of my last episode, we need to sift and winnow through the evidence and not allow the clergy of scientism to dictate our perception of reality. Remember, it's about learning how to think, not being told what to think. This will take more than one episode to get through, and we're going to have to break it up a bit because we have some exciting guests coming onto the show in the very near future, and I think that that will probably make it so that we have to slip that in between segments of this series. I also need to let you know that my ever-loving work schedule has once again changed. Not my job, just my schedule. I work every other weekend, and that is why I release episodes every other weekend. So because of the tedious nature of the research this series is causing and my rearranged work schedule, I'm going to have to figure out how to flip-flop to the other weekend. The episodes will be released as I finish the segments, and that may or may not stick to the usual rotation, but we'll get back to that. Be patient. Remember that I actually don't get paid for this, so I do what I can when I can. I got to work a full-time job and take care of the house and the animals and, you know, actually be a husband and a parent and a grandparent. So I thank you for your kind consideration and your patience. Okay, short break here. We'll do this right up front. The Subtle Cane Podcast works on an admittedly irrational value-for-value system. That means that if you feel that what I'm doing here has value, and if you're listening, I assume it does, that you consider returning that value in the form of time, talent, or treasure to someone else, paid forward. I offer a suggestion for consideration each episode with the Subtle Cane Spotlight. This is my way of highlighting other people's work and bringing it to your attention. And hopefully you like what they're doing and choose to help them out. I've been asking myself, to be honest, a little bit, what's wrong with me? Why don't I want to get paid for what I do? Well, I think I believe that this work will all pay off someday, some way for me. I have faith in that. But right now I'm working a good job and making ends meet. I'm meeting amazing people all over the world through what I do. And I'm really hope that I'm bringing you valuable information or at least entertaining you. I never want to amuse you, as that is the opposite of thoughtful contemplation. But I hope that, I'm helping out in some small way. In any event, for episode 67, for Prying Out Loud, part one, the Subtle Cane Spotlight shines on Mo Facts of the Mo Facts with Adam Curry podcast. Seriously, if you want like the most amazing breakdown of race relations out there, if you want to experience a mind-boggling depth of insight into human nature, and if you want to hear decades worth of priceless audio clips that must take forever to dig up, then you need to check out Mo Facts with Adam Curry. I'll let the show speak for itself. The links are in the show notes. Take it from me. Do yourself a favor and give Mo your undivided attention. Give him a chance. Back to it. So, let's start laying some groundwork. Before we dig into the actual paper, I want to address some related material. At least I think it's related. A while back, I talked about the criminal justice system and how it's hypothetically supposed to work here in the United States. The concept I'm referring to is that idea that everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Flawed as it is in practice, that's the ideal that we're supposed to be pursuing. We're going to be discussing the experimental mRNA injections that were given to a large portion of the global population. With no longitudinal studies performed, no long-term data can exist for a new intervention. That's not up for debate. We can say absolutely that it would be self-contradictory to claim long-term data can exist for something new. Seems like something you don't have to say, but there you have it. We have to say it in this case. For anyone who is listening, for the sake of all that's holy, please can we accept that one premise? There was no long-term data on the potential risks associated with the jabs. Okay. Accepting that as a given, I will make my next point. When introducing a new medical intervention, the onus is on the one proposing it, to flip the script, so to say, on the innocent before proven guilty concept. Any new intervention, we have to consider guilty before proven innocent. In order to fulfill the Hippocratic obligation to do no harm, we must approach a new intervention with a very high index of suspicion. All efforts must be made to ensure that risk has been mitigated to the extent that it is possible. And you can never completely remove risk, but every effort must be made to mitigate it. This was not done with the jabs. The reasoning, we are told, was that it was an emergency and certain, shall we say, formalities had to be set aside to address an imminent threat to our safety, including medical autonomy. Not a good look. This, I believe, was a fatal flaw, quite literally, in many, many cases. I do understand why people accepted this as a viable option, because fear has that effect on people. Many, many well-intentioned people were willing to accept the risk of one unknown for what was at least proposed to be a known risk. If we don't risk the possibility of A, let's say, then B will certainly happen. That was the narrative that was put out. It was a calculation that made sense to a large portion of the population, myself and probably many of you excluded. This tactic of promulgating fear to circumvent best practice is unfortunately and increasingly becoming more common. That's because it's a very effective technique and it's good for controlling behavior and it's extremely profitable for certain industries. That doesn't mean that we should be unsympathetic who made a different risk-benefit analysis than us in this case. We all have our fears and we are all susceptible to this tactic, no matter our political or ideological persuasion, because everyone has their triggers. I promise, we're going to be getting to the content of the paper in question, but it's important to lay the foundation of this series before we go on. It's got to be on solid footing. So there are too many people willing to jump at every headline and catastrophize for the sake of clicks and views. I hope I'm not one of them. I may not have the massive audience and I don't profit from this financially, but this is essentially a labor of love for me. It has been wisely stated that if something is free, then you're the product. And that is almost always true. The thing that I hope makes this show different is that I have irrationally chosen to do this work entirely for free. Would I like to be paid for what I do? Yeah, like I said. Would it make it easier to sit in front of the computer and spend all the hours it takes to research and prepare? Oh, yeah. It's really hard to get motivated some days, but perhaps I will find another way to create more content that does generate some income for me. As for this here, what you are listening to, it is completely done as a service to you because I care. Some people think I'm an idiot for not getting paid. Maybe. But at least you know that I truly have no agenda here, other than trying to be a voice that offers an alternative to the narratives. And I hope that sinks in. I might get things wrong, but there's no one holding my leash. And I hope that counts for something. Okay, let's get back to it. The material we will be addressing, while hypothetical, as I said, has some potentially horrific implications. And so I don't want to be cavalier about it. The specific paper I will be addressing is called A Potential Role of the Spike Protein in Neurodegenerative Diseases, a Narrative Review. It was published on February 11th, 2023 in the peer-reviewed medical journal Curious. That's C-U-R-E-U-S. A link in the show notes for your review. This material is dense and copiously cited with some 134 references. Now, I had to look up quite a bit of the terminology, and I had to refresh myself on the topics discussed just to read through it and grasp the concepts. I hope that I can explain what needs explaining. And if you believe that I have misunderstood something or you hear me make mistakes, You can email me or message me on Telegram or even Substack, and I'll happily address it. Keep me honest. This isn't about me. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It's okay to be wrong. It's not okay to intentionally deceive people. Too much of that going around these days. In order to get this train rolling down the tracks, we're going to have to define some terminology that will come into play. I will try to explain things as I go, but there are a few things that we need to start with. First, we have to define the term prion. I'm not sure how many of you have heard of prion disease before, but it's not so common that I can assume anything. I have a link in the show notes to the CDC's website as well. The CDC's prion page says this, quote, prion diseases or transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, TSEs, are a family of rare progressive neurodegenerative disorders that affect both humans and animals. They are distinguished by long incubation periods, characteristic spongiform changes associated with neuronal loss, and a failure to induce inflammatory response. The causative agents of TSEs are believed to be prions. The term prions refers to abnormal, pathogenic agents that are transmissible and are able to induce abnormal folding of specific normal cellular proteins called prion proteins that are found most abundantly in the brain. The functions of these normal prion proteins are still not completely understood. The abnormal folding of the prion protein leads to brain damage and the characteristic signs and symptoms of the disease. Prion diseases are usually rapidly progressive and always fatal. Okay, we have to break this down a little. A little work up front will go a long way. Transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, TSEs. That's a mouthful. What are they? Have you heard of them? Chances are that you have heard of mad cow disease. Mad cow disease, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy, made its way into the news in the 90s because there was a bit of a scandal in the UK related to the supply of meat and its potential implications for cross-species transmission. I linked the wiki page on the UK outbreak just for people to check out as a simple reference. So keep in mind it's Wikipedia. It's just there as a launch point if you're interested in that particular line of inquiry. The Wikipedia article is actually relatively well-referenced, so there are several books I would also like to suggest. I'll have those in the show notes as well. The prion disease issue is not just related to the jabs. There's a lot of evidence that this problem is multifaceted and much more prevalent than we are led to believe. For our purposes here, though, we have to stay rather narrow in our focus. Otherwise, we'll be just all over the place. So mad cow disease, or BSE, has a few relatives that we're going to be primarily concerned with here because they are the human counterparts. There are other animal versions, and again, we have to stay rather narrow in our focus. So human prion diseases. Let's give some examples. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or CJD, variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or VCJD, fatal familial insomnia, and last but not least, Kuru. We're mostly going to be concerned here with the CJD. So what does a weird misfolded prion protein disease have to do with the jabs? What indeed? Let me read the abstract from our article and see if it helps make any connections. Really, this is one of those times that I have to insist that you take a few minutes to follow provided links. It's going to help you a lot. It might take longer to get through the episode for you, but I don't drop new ones every other day, obviously, so you have plenty of time to do your homework. So here's the abstract. Quote, human prion protein and prion-like protein misfolding are widely recognized as playing a causal role in many neurodegenerative diseases. Based on in vitro and in vivo experimental evidence relating to prion and prion-like disease, we extrapolate from the compelling evidence that the spike glycoprotein of SARS-CoV-2 contains extended amino acid sequences characteristic of a prion-like protein to infer its potential to cause neurodegenerative disease. We propose that vaccine-induced spike protein synthesis can facilitate the accumulation of toxic prion-like fibrils in neurons. We outline various pathways through which these proteins could be expected to distribute throughout the body. We review both cellular pathologies and the expression of disease that could become more frequent in those who have undergone mRNA vaccination. Specifically, we describe the spike protein's contributions via its prion-like properties to neuroinflammation and neurodegenerative diseases, to clotting disorders within the vasculature, to further disease risk due to suppressed prion protein regulation in the context of widely prevalent insulin resistance, and to other health complications. We explain why these prion-like characteristics are more relevant to vaccine-related mRNA-induced spike proteins than natural infection with SARS-CoV-2. We note with an optimism an apparent loss of prion-like properties among the current Omicron variants. We acknowledge that the chain of pathological events described throughout this paper is only hypothetical and not yet verified. We also acknowledge that the evidence we usher in, while grounded in the research literature, is currently largely circumstantial, not direct. Finally, we describe the implications of our findings for the general public, and we briefly discuss public health recommendations we feel need urgent consideration, end quote. So that's the abstract, and that's a lot to take in. But we will be addressing these things as we go. The key to doing this right is not to involve or understand every single detail. It's to provide a good enough context for you to understand the basic premises and then provide you with the links you need to look into the topic for yourselves. Now, I know I have a smart audience. My producers are here because they are patient and willing to consider alternatives to the narratives. I respect you all, and I think that this is an important and largely overlooked aspect of the mRNA debate. Okay, you heard what was said in the abstract. I'll hit a couple of the higher low points. Human prion protein and prion-like protein misfolding are widely recognized as playing a causal role in many neurodegenerative diseases. Another point, the spike protein from SARS-CoV-2 contains extended amino acid sequences characteristic of a prion-like protein to infer its potential to cause neurodegenerative disease. Another point, we propose that vaccine-induced spike protein synthesis can facilitate the accumulation of toxic prion-like fibrils in neurons. And they will also be covering pathways, pathologies, and the expression of the disease so that the argument can be made that the spike proteins may cause neurodegenerative disease. They also provide evidence that the mRNA vaccination would cause more risk than simple infection with SARS-CoV-2. And they talk about a further disease risk due to the widely prevalent insulin resistance we see, type 2 diabetes, for example. They also briefly discuss public health recommendations they feel need urgent consideration. Urgent consideration. Now, this was written in preprint in mid-2022. The article was published in February 2023, but the preprint was already available in 2022. So, have you heard much about this concern? Probably not. Must be that naughty misinformation we keep hearing about. Except this was in a peer-reviewed medical journal that I found on the National Institute of Health's website. So, remember what I said about being guilty before proven innocent when we're talking about new medical interventions. If these concerns were made public by serious professionals and published in an esteemed medical journal, which later went on to be available in PubMed and on NIH, maybe we should have seen a pause in the mRNA jabs. But no, boost it up, yo. Make sure to stay updated. Unfriggin' believable. Or is it? All right, so that's some of the groundwork. And then the abstract and the beginning of setting the stage to discuss this potential concern for prion disease caused mainly through the vaccination program with the mRNA jabs. So we have a concern that was voiced already in 2022 in the professional medical community about this potential. We will learn a little bit more about Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, but what I want to say at the outset is this is always fatal, this disease, and it has a very long incubation period. So these implications or these possible effects would be something we'd be seeing years down the road. And without even taking this into consideration, we just keep on jabbing away. And that's what I really want to drive that home. A long incubation period, always fatal. So even if this is a small percentage of the population, this should really have been given more consideration, in my humble opinion. And so we're going to go through it and we're going to figure it out. Tune in next time for a continuation of this review. Please rate and review this show, tell others about it, and always, always remember, you are valued, you are loved, and you are worthy. God bless, and good night.
Back once the fire's lit, let the embers glow and be done with it. I'm startled by my lack of fear as the world I love turns to ash.